Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
This is the Dale and Keith Show.
Pastrnak, he scores!
Krejci scores!
He scores! Patrice Bergeron! And the Bruins are up 1-0!
Dale Arnold.
When we talk about energy, that is what Cam Newton is bringing. I have talked to a handful of players, and that's the first thing that jumps out to them is that Cam brings energy.
And he's got a great energy. Definitely brings a good energy.
Rich Keefe. And that's when I knew that if I kept doing this and kept learning, that I could have more and more success in this league.
Hey, way to go. Oh, hey, whoa, did you see that throw, everybody?
Dale and Keefe with Andy Hart.
After reviewing the play, there was control and possession by the goaltender, therefore nullifying the hand.
Wow.
Puck Luck on the WEEI Sports Radio Network.
Hour number two, Dale and Keith, Sports Radio WEEI. Andy Hart, WEEI.com, is in the house with us. Nick Cattles joins us as well. I mentioned this on the pregame show yesterday before the Bruins, well, yesterday morning, actually, before the Bruins played game one of their playoff series with the Carolina Hurricanes. We all, as sports fans, have a tendency to fall victim to recency bias. Whatever we've seen most recently is what it is from this point forward.
Guilty.
And a lot of people are, and we all are. And coming out of the round robin, the lackluster play in the exhibition game and then the three games of the round robin, those people who didn't like what they saw from the Boston Bruins was totally understandable, but I think they probably gave you a little better indication yesterday of exactly who they are as a team.
Yeah, I liked what I saw early, even though you were playing a 1-1, 2-2, 3-3 game along the way, and obviously you're a single goal away from losing, and maybe we'd be talking about things differently. I don't know what we would be talking about. But
we'd be talking about, oh, they're in deep trouble. They got to break this team.
It's over, guys.
Right.
It's over.
But the energy, you know, Mutt and I were on during the game yesterday, and the energy and the shots, and they were the better team. I think Rob Brind'Amour made a comment at some point last night when he was talking about the controversial goal where he said, not that we were the better team, but if that goal is disallowed, who knows what happened. So even he sort of alluded to, clearly the Bruins were the better team on that ice. And Dale, you've been telling me that for days, that not necessarily were you feeling great about how the Bruins were playing coming out of the round robin, but you wanted to remind everyone that the Hurricanes were the inferior team. Correct? Just flat out inferior. You have the better team.
Inferior is not the right word. What I said was that the Bruins were clearly the better team.
Right. Yeah.
So inferior makes it sound like I'm knocking, you know, a good hockey team. They're a really good team, by the way. They're not the team that the Bruins swept in the Eastern Conference Finals a year ago. They're better than that.
Yeah, I didn't say crappy. I just said inferior to the Bruins.
Yeah. Okay. You know, when you look at yesterday, I know some people will talk about the top line, the perfection line. Those guys are expected to be good. And yesterday, they were better. There's no doubt about that. What jumped out to me was the second line. I thought the second line was terrific.
Bingo.
I cannot remember David Krejci playing a better game than he played yesterday in maybe, I don't know, a year, 2 years. I don't know the last time Krejci played as well as he played yesterday. Fantastic. Engaged from the drop of the puck. His obvious skills are still there even at 33, 34. The vision is there. The hands are there. He can skate as fast as he's ever been able to skate before. and you know, the nonstop pressure. I thought Krejci was great, Dale and Andy, and I also thought Andre Kasha. You know, we've been looking at him, wondering what he was going to bring to the table. You know, he had the COVID-19 situation with Pasta. Pasta came back before he did. Everybody, I thought, was looking at Kasha yesterday, wondering, hey, now that the playoff lights are on, so to speak, what is this guy going to do? And I thought Kasha was great. And that Krejci-Kasha chemistry, right off the bat, they looked like they've been playing for years together. So the biggest thing to me yesterday, Dale, I don't know how you feel, but the biggest thing to me was that second line. If your top six play as well as they played yesterday, they're winning this series and they're going on a run.
Yeah, even I think it was Bruce Cassidy who said, you know, if our second line consistently plays like that, we're going to be a very tough team to beat. And, you know, you go to the Stanley Cup final a year ago, when the top line suddenly got shut down by the St. Louis Blues, they didn't get secondary scoring,
right,
and they weren't able to win a game seven against the Blues, where if they'd gotten any sort of secondary scoring at all, you know, they got goals from three different lines yesterday. You know, Charlie Coyle had the goal, which Rod Brind'Amour didn't like much. Krejci had the goal. Pasternak and Bergeron had goals for that top line. When you spread out your scoring like that, you don't have to have the best power play in the league, although I'd like to see it get a lot better. You don't have to have, you know, shut down, lights out goaltending.
Yep.
You're a tough team to beat if you just do that.
And Kasha was a theory, right? This was, I think I was on with you, Dale, when they made the deal. And we talked about it and the idea and Krejci, and it was just a theoretical, because for, what has it been now, 160 days that, you know, he's sort of been an idea, and what is it going to lead to and what is the benefit? And I think you saw some of that benefit. But I would, like, the first goal, the Marchand to Pasternak goal, beautiful. Like, that's what you've come to expect, right?
That's a set play.
Right.
They've got a bunch of set plays. They run off the faceoff. That's one that they've used on a number of occasions this year, and teams still can't figure out how to stop it.
And it was beautiful, and that was like a, maybe Brad Marchand was right. Maybe they weren't really taking the other one seriously. Like, that was the embodiment of, see the switch, Andy? I just flipped it for you, right? And the way they scored that goal. But they walked a tightrope as a team, right? Bad shorthanded goal. Tuukka, soft goal.
That was one dumb play by Pasternak.
Awful pass.
I mean,
pass
it was just a
line.
Terrible play by
Lazy.
Pasternak.
Lazy.
Yeah.
Brad
Head
Marchand's
down.
Been hearing about one terrible play for like
no,
a year.
I understand.
Like,
I don't want to make it sound like the whole the five guys on the ice screwed up on the shorthanded
no.
goal. One guy did.
But I'm just saying the divide between the two teams, or the divide between winning and losing, well, they might not have been quite the same. And that's my own. They didn't come out and blow doors. Like,
right.
They didn't. You know, this wasn't.
It's funny, though. They hit three posts.
Oh, yeah. No question.
DeBrusque threw one wide of an empty net.
Yep.
It could have easily been 6-2 or something.
No, it's a little
that
bit like.
That actually makes me feel better about the future.
It's a little bit of like Patriots Super Bowls. Oh, they could have lost all those ones. They were all three. Yeah, and they could have won the other ones they lost, so they probably averaged out to about where they should be. This game probably averaged out where the Bruins were the better team, and in the end, maybe it took a little longer than it should have, they won the game, and they go up 1-0 in the series. I'm just, this was not a knockout Mike Tyson 15 seconds into the fight, it was over, that they said, nope, you stink, you're inferior to us as a hockey team, and they blew doors. So
let's talk briefly about Rod Brind'Amour for a
moment. Yes, please.
Because
he got screwed.
He got himself in some trouble yesterday. So he's doing one of these, you know, post-game Zoom sessions the way you're supposed to, the way all the coaches do. As the Zoom session was ending, he said on the Zoom session, so no one asked about, and the Zoom session got cut off. And everybody's going, wait a minute, he wants to say something. So he then
who's there, Stacey James? Who's their PR director that's going, shut it off!
Okay, get
shut
it off!
Controversy.
Pull the plug!
Yeah.
So he then sought out some of the Carolina Hurricanes beat people, reached out to them, and Sarah Sivian, who used to work here, in fact, used to do some stuff for us as well, covers the Hurricanes down there. Let me just give you some of the quotes from Brind'Amour, because she laid them all out in a series of tweets, and I'll give you word for word what Brind'Amour told Sarah Sivian and others. Ready, Scheim? Let her rip. There's no way that's a goal in any league. We have a million people doing this, and they can't get it right. That's the problem with this league. The guys up there that aren't putting any sweat equity into this game decide the game. It's wrong. He doesn't tell me what the call on the ice is. If it's not a glove hand pass, I would have said, then that's bleeping goalie interference. The guy comes to me and says it's either goalie interference because he has it and the guy knocked it out of his hand, or it's a glove hand pass. You got to pick one. Either way, it's no goal. What? You have to tell me what the call is. He's telling me to pick one. He comes to me and says, pick one. I'm like, well, it's one of the two. There's absolutely no way that that can be a goal. He's putting it on me to pick it. Well, you tell me what you're calling. You're calling he had it? Then it's a bleeping goalie interference. If you're saying he didn't have it, you're not telling me what call you're making, and I have to pick one. Then they go upstairs and say, oh, he had possession. It's horse bleep. This is where the league is a joke. That series of tweets cost Rod Brind'Amour $25,000.
I got to tell you, I would have been ejected on the spot because this is a Laurel and Hardy skit. What'd you call? Well, what are you challenging? Well, what'd you call? Well, what are you challenging? Like, there's no answer. He can't win that fight. He was set up to fail. Now, I actually, Dale, I am the hockey novice, so kick me in the nuts and call me wrong if you want to. I thought it was a goal. I thought it was a goal. But the way it was officiated and articulated, they got porked.
Yeah. As I always like to do in these situations, Nick, is just reverse the roles. If that's Tuukka Rask and the puck gets knocked out of his glove to an opposing player and ends up in the back of the net, Bruins fans are screaming,
losing their goal, can't call.
So you thought he possessed the puck? That
yes.
He controlled
it? Now, in super slow-mo, it looks different. I know the real speed. I get that. But yes, I thought he had his glove over the puck and should have been whistled dead, but they didn't whistle it dead.
Well, yeah, a big problem with all of this, and Andy mentioned it, it was also the explanation. Like, when you go out there and you explain to the people...
Yeah, he did not do a good job on that at all.
No, I mean, if the puck is iced, if it's frozen by the goalie, if it's under his glove, and you say, all right, that's it, then play has stopped. It can't continue to move on. So as soon as he mentioned that, it made it feel like, okay, play's dead. If play's dead, how's that a goal after the play is ruled dead?
Right.
It was a very strange explanation. And, you know, if I am Carolina, I'm steaming. Now, fortunately for them and unfortunately for the Bruins, you know, the Bruins go on the power play. It's like the, you know, it's the insult to the injury. Not only did you get hosed on the call, but now because you lost the challenge.
Exactly. You get delay of game.
And... Yes. So now you're dealing with a 2-minute minor. And so, but, you know, it worked out for Carolina. The hockey gods said, yeah, that's not the way it should have gone. Pasta makes the lazy pass. You get the shorty. So, you know, end all, be all. It was good for Carolina at the end result. But, yeah,
Nick, to your point, let's play exactly the quote-unquote explanation that the referee gave on the ice.
After reviewing the play, there was control and possession by the goaltender, therefore nullifying the hand pass.
Wow.
Carolina is charged with minor penalty for delay of game.
That made zero sense.
Nope, yes. Still doesn't.
If he had possession, then you got to blow the play dead.
Yep. Yeah. There's a whistle.
As you point out, Nick, in the long run, it probably didn't matter because of the stupid play by Pasternak at the blue line. But the Bruins could have had an opportunity to put that game away at that point.
But you never know, right? I mean, I'm a big believer in the butterfly effect. If there's no goal there, who knows how it plays out? Like, you just, and I think that's Brind'Amour's point as well as. I mean, you need to, it's one thing if the referee screws up the announcement, okay, he got nervous or whatever, but he screwed up the interaction with the coach. Like the actual, how it should have unfolded, he screwed a coach. I mean, is that fair to say?
Yeah, well, Brind'Amour was just saying, tell me what it is.
Pick one.
Pick one of two things, because then I'll challenge the other. Like, you tell me what the call is.
The hand pass, I could see where the video replay would not have told you exactly what happened.
Right.
It looked like it might have brushed Bjork's back, but I don't think it was irrefutable evidence that it did. You know, did it go off Richie's glove? Did it go off the Carolina player's glove? If they had called that, you can't take the goal back. But they didn't call anything. They said it's a good goal, and then he's saying, well, I want to challenge it. And they said, well, what are you going to challenge? It's just... I'm a Bruins fan, okay? I do the Bruins games on TV. But if that happened to the Bruins, Bruins fans would be screaming about that play.
Yeah, and I think people looking at this game yesterday, ultimately the question was going in, can they flip the switch? I don't know if they flipped the switch until overtime. I thought they dominated that first overtime. And it was a borderline miracle for the Hurricanes to get to that second overtime.
Yeah,
I thought
felt
the
like
Bees,
a matter of when, not if, didn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly. I mean, I thought the Bees came out, you know, firing their ass, shot out of a cannon in that overtime. But there are some issues, and I'm hesitant to say, all right, everything is set, everything's a go, because, you know, the power play again, Dale and Andy, yesterday, terrible. You know, the entries were not good.
Not only did they not score, they gave up a goal.
Yeah, I mean, entry's not good, sloppy, just like we're talking about the Pasta pass at the blue line. The spacing, at one point, I don't know which power play it was, it all runs together kind of like days during COVID-19, but at one point, they were like the Keystone Cops. They had like three guys at the blue line bumping into each other. The spacing was a mess. They didn't get nearly enough zone time on the power play. It's pretty much one and done when they can even get a shot at the net. So they have a number of issues on that power play that they've got to figure out. We're talking about one of the best power plays in all of hockey,
It's the best power play left. They were second in the league this year, but Edmonton's out. So it's the best power play of the 16 teams remaining.
Yeah, it's just messy.
For the regular season. Now, here's the other, and it's, I think there are a couple of decisions tonight for Bruce Cassidy. I think he could consider replacing Nick Ritchie with Carson Kuhlman in tonight's game.
Yep.
Ritchie struggled, I thought, in great degree in yesterday's game. I think he could consider the possibility of getting Connor Clifton into the game, perhaps for Jeremy Lauzon back on the blue line. Maybe. The big question here is, what do you do in goal? And we talked a lot about this yesterday with Billy Jaffe and Barry Peterson and myself. If you don't play Yaroslav Halak today, you're not going to play him.
Right. But
it's today or when, I mean, they have back-to-backs between games 5 and 6. So you're up 3 games to do. Oh, let's throw Halak in there, see what happens.
The flips.
No. Or you're down 3 games to do. Oh, let's play Halak in game 6. No. This is the game, if you're going to play him at all, this is the one you play him in.
The flip side of that, if you play him based on Cassidy's comments, it's Tuukka's decision, right? I listen to those comments, and I hear him say, well, you know, there's no travel and sort of, yep, you know, the nature of the game. We're all here, and we're going to get good night's sleep, and, you know, it wasn't overly stressful. So some of the reasons why you normally would make the switch, you know, don't really apply to this situation.
Well, let's hear what Cassidy said.
For the most important part.
And let's hear what he said after the game yesterday afternoon.
Well, we'll talk about tomorrow. Tonight, we'll let everyone kind of enjoy this one. Overtime, they had one off net chance, Svechnikov down the wing. So the one thing about today's game, there wasn't a lot of taxing stretches in our own end where, you know, goalies will fatigue and dehydrate. Penalty kill was pretty solid in that regard. Didn't get stuck a lot in our end. So that is a big factor on, you know, the recovery of Tuukka. 12 o'clock start. Don't forget, a lot of the back-to-back games, Kevin, specifically with us and well, everybody, is you're traveling and you're getting a poor night's sleep and an early morning. So those won't be the case in this particular back-to-back. Everyone should sleep well tonight, get some rest. So there's that consideration too. So you got two things that, you know, can tilt towards Tuukka getting a back-to-back start. I'm not saying that's going to happen because the conversation needs to be had with him and goalie Bob.
Notice he didn't say he was going to have a conversation with Yaroslav Halak.
Yeah.
And I find that interesting.
A conversation with Tuukka Rask and goalie Bob. That, for people who don't know, that's Bob Asenza, the goalie coach for the team.
So, Dale, am I wrong in taking that Bruce Cassidy said, I think Tuukka can play tomorrow night, but if Tuukka says he can't, I guess I'll have to go with Halak.
I will say this. He will absolutely give Rask. Rask could either talk his way in or talk his way out. If Rask went to Cassidy today and said, hey, listen, I'm still trying to get this game, you know, fixed. I got my own stuff to work on. I want to play. He's playing.
Right.
If he said to Cassidy, you know what, maybe this is a good chance to let Yaro play a game, he'll be out. It'll totally be up to Tuukka Rask tonight.
And Tuukka will take a beating from the haters, in my opinion. If he is not on the ice today, they will, Tuukka tapped out. Typical Tuukka. Like, that will be a point of criticism for the Tuukka haters.
Well, he's always in the crosshairs, right? No matter what. I mean, I'm in the camp that Tuukka's damn good at what he does. And I think he's been really good in the postseason. People glorify, they blow up these one goals that happen from time to time. Like yesterday, the first goal, it was a soft goal. There's no doubt, but that doesn't mean you throw the guy in the trash and you call him a crappy goaltender. I think from Cassidy's standpoint, what Dale's talking about, that's the right way to approach this, right? I mean, listen, Tuukka's your number one guy. He's up for the Vezina, and you're going to go as far as he can take you. He's had 4.5 months off. You look at this roster, the age of the roster, I would much rather get through this series, you know, quicker than make this a 6 or 7 game series. So I wouldn't mind seeing Tuukka start. That's what I would do if I was Cassidy. But you leave the decision up to Tuca, as Dale's saying, because, you know, if Tuca is not comfortable, if he doesn't want to be out there, the worst thing you can do is then throw him out there tonight, he craps his pants, and now you're tied 1-1. So I think it makes some sense to gauge Tuca's mental, where he's at and what he's comfortable doing.
100%. I just wouldn't have articulated it in the media session. And I love Bruce Cassidy because he's so – I love that about him. And this is – part of this is probably me being beaten in the world of Belichick for 20 years. Like, he doesn't tell you anything. He would never. And I like the fact that there's honesty there, but I probably wouldn't have done it myself if I were the coach, because I do think that – opens Tuca up for criticism, and he knows, Bruce Cassidy knows, like, the challenges that Tuca faces. How much crap did Tuca take for saying he changed diapers, whatever that comment was,
right?
Mike Milbury, that didn't sit well with him, the idea that, you know, Tuca was just being a dad during the lockdown. So he is always a focal point of criticism, and you could have just said, you know, there's some factors that might allow us to play him, and but obviously there's some factors that might go the other direction. I wouldn't have opened the door to, I'm going to talk to Tuca and make it sound like it's just Tuca's decision.
I'll be curious. We'll get Andrew Raycroft's thoughts on this as a guy who was in that position himself in the National Hockey League. He'll join us in just a few minutes. Back to your point about what Milbury said, look, and he's a Tuca fan, by the way. He thinks Tuca's really good. You know, he thinks Tuca is one of the reasons why the Bruins are consistently at least contending for a cup every year. But he said he says things at times that just set Bruins fans' teeth on edge. And he does.
Yep.
He doesn't care. He doesn't give a damn. He says what he thinks. He thinks what he says. And whether that bothers you or me or Nick, that's just not in Tuca's lexicon. He doesn't give a damn whether you like it or not.
Right. He doesn't have the, Trot Nixon gene or whatever. He's not going to have the dirty pants and the dirt dog kind of mentality. He just isn't. He's obviously from a different country, different personality, different style. And I do think that rubs some of the, you know, big bad Bruins, old school Boston blue collar sports fans the wrong way.
No, who cares? I mean, who cares?
That's your core audience. If you're a Bruin, that's your core audience.
Let me tell you this, because I talked to him recently about this.
Yep.
And for people who don't remember, when he started in the Bruins organization, he was in Providence, and he was a madman. I mean, he was a knucklehead.
Yeah, and throwing sticks and stuff.
Famous YouTube videos out there smashing sticks. And he said to me, he said, I had to realize I can't play the game at the highest level and be like that. I had to settle myself down. And you look at the way he plays, he's so calm all the time. And it was a conscious effort on his part to just almost zen-like.
Yep.
And he's not going to be like Tim Thomas, diving here and back there. If he's playing like that, he's losing. So this is something he actually said about trying to do to himself.
Yeah. Right.
And I do think there's value to that. I mean, you hear, you know, cornerbacks, you got to have short memory or whatever positions they are that are these positions in the spotlight where when you screw up, everyone knows you're not a guard. You didn't have to go to 7 replays to figure out, who missed that block that led to the sack. It's obvious you're in those roles, and the mentality has to be confidence, ultimate confidence, and short memory to move on. And I do think there's value in that, but it doesn't always resonate with the core or hardcore Bruins fan.
Right, which I get. The reason why I ask who cares, you know, what resonates with Bruins fans, what resonates with all fans of every sport is winning and producing. And so he's in line for a Vezina if it goes his way. He's been fantastic, big picture, overall in the playoffs. I couldn't care less how he deals with the media. I couldn't care less if he leaves his heart on his sleeve. I'm not worried about that stuff. Yes, it's things that we can talk about. Surely we can talk about it and discuss how he approaches the media. And Dale has a great nugget talking to him himself and Tuca saying, listen, I just can't be that way. But ultimately, the only thing that matters, it's going to be the same thing with Cam. Everybody talks about the Superman dance and everybody talks about how polarizing he is. Who gives an ish? Are they winning? Are they producing? That's what fans care about.
We'll talk to Andrew Raycroft about that and the Bruins game 2 tonight in Toronto against the Carolina Hurricanes. I said Panthers. How dumb was that?
I said Cam.
I know.
I get you there.
Just, you just get these teams all screwed up. We'll get to all of that in just a couple of minutes, but first it's time to trend.
Don't miss a minute of your favorite WEEI shows by using the Rewind feature in your radio.com app. Now here's what's trending on WEEI.
Trending now on WEEI and WEEI.com, brought to you by Awaken 180 Weight Loss. If you're trying to lose the weight you put on the last few months, you've realized it's harder to take it off than it was to put it on. Doesn't have to be. Awaken180weightloss.com. As we said, the Bruins continue their quest for the Cup tonight at 8 against the Carolina Hurricanes after their double overtime win yesterday. We'll talk to Andrew Raycroft in just a couple of minutes. Sox and Rays will finish their four-game set at 4:30 this afternoon on the Shaw's and Star Market. WEEI Red Sox Radio Network. Kyle Hart makes his Major League debut on the mound for the Sox. The Celtics playoff matchup is set. Seas will take on the Ben Simmons-less Philadelphia 76ers in the first round. That series will begin either Monday or Tuesday of next week. And breaking news in the NFL, according to Ian Rappaport and others, the 49ers and tight end George Kittle have agreed to a five-year, $75 million extension. In real terms, it's 2 years, $30 million, and then we'll see, but it's still the highest-paid tight end in the game. Trending also brought to you by the Dana-Farber Brigham and Women's Cancer Center, where everyone on your team specializes in your type of cancer and works to create a personalized care plan just for you. A plan focused on keeping you safe and defeating your cancer. Learn more at youhaveus.org.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Back to Dale and Keith on WEEI.
Hey, let's go.
There's going to be a lot of traffic on the way to the game.
Don't worry. I got Bruins plate. People get out of our way.
Au revoir. Have a good game.
Great plates. I want them too. Are you even old enough to drive?
That's an Emmy award-winning performance right there, my friend. Joining us on the Harbor One Hotline, former Bruins goaltender and my Nesson colleague, Andrew Raycroft. Good morning, Andrew.
Good morning, gang. How's everyone doing?
Everybody's doing great, thank you. If you were Peter Mrazek yesterday, how would you have handled what happened?
I would have flipped my lid probably a little bit as well. Pretty frustrating when in those situations when you're not really sure what the real outcome is or what they're looking at. And as a goaltender, you always feel like you have possession. You always feel like the whistle didn't get blown early enough.
So and he had the puck under his glove, right?
Correct. He did. Yeah, there was some kind of possession, and again, it's a matter of the whistle being blown, and sometimes some referees let it go a little longer. And it seems like in the game today now, they're more likely to not blow the whistle quick. They don't want to make that quick play and have the puck loose. So it seems to take a little bit longer, and that was the case yesterday. And whatever went down in the review, and you know, looking at it for a hand pass rather than possession, and all that, we saw, you know, Rod wasn't too happy about the outcome.
I was going to say, what was worse from a goaltender perspective, the original call or the way you ended up sort of getting screwed as a coach and as a team in the review process?
Yeah, for a goaltender, you're more upset about the fact that you knew you felt like you had possession, or you knew you felt like you had possession. So for a goaltender, I wouldn't be so upset about the fact that they looked at it the wrong way in the review process. It's more a matter of, the bottom line is, I had the puck, he took it out of my glove, it shouldn't have been a goal.
Andrew, given the circumstances, would you start Rask tonight, or would you go with the number two, the solid number two, Halak?
No, Tuukka Rask. I understand it's a back-to-back, but it's not the same kind of back-to-back we see in a regular season where you finish the game at 10:30, you get home at midnight. Sometimes you're getting on an airplane and traveling, getting into the hotel at 1 yesterday. They played at 11. They're done at 2:30. And basically the rest of the day, you get to have a nice meal and a good night's sleep. So Tuukka should be well-rested today. I can't imagine he didn't feel too bad this morning, and you're definitely going back with Tuukka and try and make this series as quick as possible.
And my guess is, if you don't play Halak tonight, short of a performance reason, Halak doesn't play in the playoffs.
I would agree with that. Short of performance, short of
you're up 7-1 or you're down 7-1 or something like that.
Yeah, and even in those situations, those are low stress, so you keep your guy in. So, no, I don't think there's any plan to go back and forth. I don't think it's going to be completely necessary, except for what we just talked about, whether there's a nick here and there. But the reality is, Tuukka's the guy. He played 26 games for them last year in the playoffs, and you know, it wasn't a high stress, even though it was double overtime yesterday. And like I said, he's had more than enough time to recover all afternoon yesterday.
When Bruce Cassidy was talking about the idea of the back-to-back and would he make a switch at goalie, he sort of talked about all the reasons why you didn't have to do it, because you're not traveling, you should get a good night's sleep, it wasn't an overly taxing performance. But then he said he'll have a conversation with Tuukka. Does that put pressure on Tuukka to, you know, even if he wanted to not play, he feels like, no, I have to play, they kind of put it on me, they clearly want me to play? Were you curious the way Bruce Cassidy talked about that so openly?
No, not really. I think we've seen that Bruce is very honest with most of his interviews, and they have conversations all the time. You know, the conversation's probably going to go like, hey, Tuukka, how you feeling? I feel good. Okay. Skate off. That's how that conversation's going to go. It won't be too in-depth. It'll just be a matter of making sure that everything checked out with his, you know, whatever, hip growings. But again, Tuukka's not going to feel pressure, you know, making that call. He's the starting goalie. He's been the starting goalie here for 10 years now, and that's the pressure that he takes on. So no, it'll be I'm assuming it's a very quick conversation, and all right, have a good one tonight.
Andrew, one last one on Tuukka here. What'd you make of his performance yesterday, especially, you know, after that first goal?
I thought he was good. I thought he moved well. I think he's still finding his timing, and when we talk about, you know, the forwards and the power play game. Again, Tuukka's only played 3 or 4 games in 5 months.
Right.
So as goaltenders, there's certain plays. I think the first goal was a play. You're not going to see that play in practice. There's a cross-ice pass to 2 draw passes, and you saw him slide across. And we saw him all last year stay on his feet. I think that's something he will address and continue to get better at and more comfortable. And then the same thing with the third goal. He's looking to his right. The screen comes all the way across his right, and he gets beat left shoulder. That's something, again, that's a feel thing. You're not going to get that in the practices. That has to come through games. And next time he'll understand that point of where he has to switch from looking right to recognizing that screen's coming to his right, and he's got to look left a little bit quicker. But, again, those are all real easy adjustments for a guy of Tuukka's caliber.
We're talking to former Bruins goaltender Andrew Raycroft, also my Nesson colleague, and Andrew will be part of the pre- and post-game coverage tonight on Nesson. When we last worked the final game of the round robin, you know, we were all talking, Andrew, even off the air, about, you know, going 0-3 in the round robin. We didn't think they were taking it very seriously. They even said they weren't taking it very seriously. But how confident were you that they were going to be able to flip that switch as we saw them do yesterday?
I was confident, and I've said that, and we talked about it. You know, I'm giving this group the benefit of the doubt. Of all groups in the National Hockey League to be able to flip the switch, to be able to turn it on, to recognize their process and feel confident in how they're progressing through that, this group deserves that. And I still believe that. I still think it's a process. But to see the big line come out, get the goal right off a face-off play at the end of the first, it's like, okay, These guys are getting better. They're getting better. And we're going to see the same with the power play. That's going to get better. That's going to get more comfortable. And their structure as well. It's not, they have a fantastic structure and they played it for a long time. But similarly to goaltending and the power play, some of that is timing and recognizing and getting the right read that you just can't manufacture in practice. And the more these guys play, the better that's going to get. So the fact they were able to do that and still have things to work on, but get a 4-3 over double overtime win is very positive from my perspective.
You touched on the power play. Obviously, they should be a good power play team. They were way back when, before the quarantine hit and everything. Now they're not. And how do you fix that in the midst of a playoff series? Is it just reps and timing? Did they not maybe do enough in the round robin? How do you think you improve in that specific area moving forward in this run?
A lot of it's reps, a lot of it's, you know, that's video. And the big thing, it's so cliche, but it's keeping it simple, getting pucks on net, trying to get that first greasy one. You see it all across the league. You look at, you know, you watch the telecast, and it seems like every team, when they go on the power play, they were 0-for-12 in the round robin. They were 2-for-12 in the round robin, 1-for-14. So the power play is one of those last things to get rolling. And when we're ramping up as quickly as the league has, that's kind of the last thing to get settled. So similar to NFL football, the defense always seems to have the advantage until the offenses get in groove, get in sync. So it's very similar in that respect. Penalty kills can put a lot of pressure on the power plays at this point, feeling confident that those, you have to make three passes to break pressure in an NHL power play. And if you're only making two of them, that pressure is going to catch up and it makes it hard. So I think for all of the teams, you're going to see power play numbers go up as the longer they play.
Andrew, I think universally we'd say that the second line yesterday was fantastic. How much of a difference does a hot second line make for this team during this run?
It makes all the difference in the world when it comes down to it. And it comes down to, you know, it's a collaboration between the first and second line. If that top line's going, even if they don't score, but they're in on the offense. They get offensive zone faceoffs for that second line. So the second line's jumping over the boards with the puck in the offensive zone rather than taking defensive draws and having to go 200 feet. They get the advantage. So it's a matter of both of those lines. And I think it goes the other way. That second line, if they can get offensive zone faceoffs, then Patrice, Marchand, Pasta can go out and run their plays and score like they did at the end of the first. So it's huge, not necessarily always scoring and always getting points, but creating momentum within the game.
Final question before we let you go. Carolina is one of the teams that in the ramp up to the first round of the playoffs kind of used both goaltenders. James Reimer played, Peter Mrazek played. Based on what he's saying this morning, it sounds as though Brendan Moore is going back to Mrazek. Does that surprise you?
Not yet. Not yet. I think they want to still establish him as the number one guy. And they played him the first two games in the round robin. They had a luxury of, I think, playing a Rangers team that wasn't quite up to their standard. And they probably recognized that and felt like they could get away with switching goalies in that situation. I think it's a little bit different here. I've got to imagine Carolina is looking at tonight's game as a must win. They recognize they can't go down to this team 2-0. And if you're in that situation, and you're Rod Brindamore, you have to go with the guy that you really believe in, and that's Peter Mrazek by the looks of things.
Andrew, we appreciate the time as always. I'll see you over there tonight.
Sounds great, guys. Have a great day. Enjoy the game.
See ya.
Thanks, Andrew.
Thanks, Andrew. Andrew Raycroft joining us. 617-779-7937. Yeah, Brindamore saying he put very little blame on Mrazek for what happened yesterday. He said the Bruins had all these grade-A chances. I thought Mrazek looked a little shaky at times, but Brindamore knows his game better than I do. I thought Tuukka gave up one bad goal. The third goal, the tying goal in the third, was just, in my opinion, a bad goal. He's got to stop that one. I thought Mrazek gave up a couple that you were going, ooh, where's he going on that one?
Also had some friendly pipes.
Yeah, the Bruins did hit three pipes.
And tink!
Jake DeBrusque missed an empty net.
Dale, you cut me off there, by the way. I had one more question I wanted
Whoa.
To... I wanted to, you know, Wiggy spent the morning shredding Zdeno Chara.
Yeah.
I was going to say, you know, noted expert Jermaine Wiggins has been very critical of the big defenseman.
Yeah, that's
what do you
shocking,
think of him?
Because as long as I've known Wiggy, he's been shredding Zdeno
Chara. Yeah, why does
Chara,
he hate
right?
Chara so much?
I don't know.
Is it personal?
I don't think so.
They meet on like a beer league sheet of ice somewhere. I doubt it, probably.
If they did, I'm going to suggest Wiggy might have backed off some of his critical comments. That is a large human being we're talking about. We'll add that into the mix in just a couple of minutes. We'll get to your calls as well. 617-779-7937. We'll talk to Mike Giardi at 12:30 about the high-energy Patriots. And, gee, what would be the difference there? It's Dale and Keefe with Heart and Cattle Sports Radio, WEEI.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Dale and Keith.
Middays 10 to 2.
On WEEI.
Well, listen, I'm going to guess it's going to be a high-end game for them tonight. The way that, I mean, if they can do that every night, we're going to be a very dangerous hockey club. And some nights I think the puck falls you, you work for it and you get it back. And other nights you work, you know, your butt off and it doesn't seem to bounce your way or find it. And you got to stick with it. Tonight they worked hard I thought Jake from the first shift on, second effort, Kretch was going, good in the circle, you know, solid with the puck, away from the puck to get it back. So, yeah, I mean, that's the form we would like. I'm not going to lie to you. I mean, I'd love to replicate that, you know, every night with those guys. And like I said, Kasha took a few hits. He bounced back. But really what I liked is the second effort on the pucks. You know, that makes any team hard to play against. And, that's what happened with that line tonight. And they were, I mean, I guess if you ask Carolina, I thought they were hard to play against.
Bruins head coach Bruce Cassidy after the game yesterday talking about the play of his second line. From left to right, Jake DeBrusque, David Krejci, Andre Kasha. And when Don Sweeney made the move at the trade deadline for Kasha, it was specifically to play the right wing with David Krejci. Really, right. Since the departure of Nathan Horton, the Bruins have been casting about trying to find that guy to play beside Krejci. They hope they've got it, but they've had a lot of guys who've tried.
Nick, you know what this reminds me of? We had a long discussion, I think, two Saturdays ago when we were talking about the Celtics' playoff chances and who the most important factors were in their success. And we sort of debated, and it, you know, Jaylen Brown, it's Marcus Smart, it's the, you know, it's Tatum to be the star they need him to be. I feel like we're getting in that same conversation right now about your Boston Bruins. And it's like age old cliche, your goalie, right? Tuukka. Tuukka's the most important guy. You got to ride that. Now you get the perfection line. Are they back? Can they carry you? Will they not fall short? Like they now you get the secondary scoring, the second line here, who you passionately believe, you know, they were sort of the key to the game yesterday, the most dangerous line on the ice, and Bruce Cassidy just agreed. I feel like that's the discussion we're getting into. Stack, because we know they're a championship contender, right? We all start at that point. They're a cup contender. And some of us believe that if they don't win the cup, it's a failure. But I don't know if we're willing to go that far just yet. But what is the most important aspect of the game or role? And I would go with you to some degree, because I think once you get that secondary scoring, it's sort of like your Gordon Hayward argument. Well, if he's going to be your fourth scorer but score 18 every night or 20 every night, and we got four guys scoring 20, if we're going to follow up a first line that we know how good they are with a second line that is giving opponents fits, well, we're going to be tough to beat.
Yeah, I think when we're talking about postseason in any sport, you need your studs to be your studs. I mean, you still need the top line to be very good, I think, to make that run. But the difference, you know, between making the run and, you know, maybe falling a little bit short of that is not only the top line. You do need some of that ancillary roster that's left over to help you out from time to time. And I think when you look at the second line, why it's so crucial for those guys to get going, even though I would still say the most important guys on this team are the top line, because if they play their best, the Bruins are already tough to beat. But when you supplement that, Andy and Dale, with the second line, and they don't have to play as great as they played yesterday. They were terrific. I mean, DeBrusk had a little bit of a tough day, but he was in position. He kept putting himself in position to succeed. He just couldn't finish. He missed the pass in the first period. He missed the open net, as we saw. And what a camera angle from NBC Sports Network and Nesson and all the angles that you can see now with the bubble. It, wide open net. But if you have that second line, who is supplementing the quote-unquote perfection line, now it makes this team almost impossible to beat. It's a difference between making a deep run and maybe possibly making a deep run much easier for yourself if you get those other guys going as well.
I don't want to put let me just give you some quick numbers to back up what Nick's telling you, and I promise Matthew will get to the call with you in just a moment. Matt Porter of the Globe put this stat up yesterday, the DeBrusk-Krejci-Kasha line. When they were on the ice, whoever they were playing against, shot attempts, they out-attempted their opposing line 23-7. Shots on goal, they outshot their opposing line 13-1. Scoring chances, they outchanced their opposing line 12-5, and goals 1-0. They play like that. In fact, if they bury a few more, because, you know, DeBrusk had issues, they hit some posts. If they actually bury a couple more, good Lord.
Yeah, I mean, if that second line finished on all of their chances yesterday, that game is a laughingstock. It is literally and utterly comical what that game would have looked like. And I'm sorry, aside from Tuukka melting, and I'm a Tuukka guy. I don't think he's going to melt by any means. But aside from an utter disaster that's almost unpredictable, if you get your top six humming like that, I mean, you expect the top line to be even better than they were yesterday. But if you get that kind of production, and it's not only production, Andy and Dale, it's the consistency of it. You know, it's not like they played a couple of great shifts, then they had a couple of shifts where they weren't so great, they kind of fell back a little bit. That was consistent pressure, consistent zone time, and consistent chemistry from the drop of the puck through that second overtime before Bergey ended it. And if you get that consistent production and pressure, it's great. And I know the text line 6379037 texting us, you know, it was one game. Yes, it was one game. But what we do is here on the radio.
We looked at the round robin and said they were done.
Yeah.
Right, some
right.
people
and,
did.
And we also evaluate what happened yesterday. We're talking about the game yesterday. So the game yesterday, they were terrific. What we're saying is if you can forecast that moving forward, they don't have to be as great as they were yesterday. But if they're really good, Dale, you're right. This team is, I think, almost unbeatable unless injuries happen, and that's the unpredictable column.
Matthew's in Wilmington. Hey, Matthew, how you doing?
Hey, pretty good, Dale. How are you?
Doing great.
I had a few things I want to touch on you guys talked about. First of all, on the Brind'Amour, I agree that if it was on the Bruins' side, we'd be ticked off. When I was looking at it, it looked like to me that Mrazek covered the puck with a stick under his glove. And so I think that's why the referees kind of let that rake go, because when he clamped on that puck, I forget whose stick it was, there was one stick that was underneath his glove with the puck on it, and then someone else kind of poked it loose. So to me, it's kind of one of those 50-50 things where the referee gives it that split second, and I think that's why that ended up happening. But I agree that he got a terrible explanation on the call.
Yeah.
On the Tuukka side, it's the Stanley Cup playoffs. If it wasn't for this season, it doesn't matter if it's back-to-back, if it was 2 days, 5 days from now, it's a Stanley Cup playoffs. If you're not playing your number one, then what are you doing? That you'd be chastised, unless he had a bad game, which he didn't. And then the third thing I wanted to bring up.
Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead to your
third. The third thing I was going to bring up is you guys were talking about the third line and second line. But to me, you remember Charlie Coyle last year was a huge difference maker. And right now, you got the Corrali line is playing well. Wagner's, you know, been scoring goals. Those guys have been creating chances. Looks like the perfection line is starting to come back. Second line has been good. If you get Charlie Coyle going, to your point, if Kuhlman comes in and takes over for Richie's spot, and that gets that line clicking a little bit more, Charlie Coyle has a chance to be a game-breaker or big game-changer as a third-line player, because we saw last year how he can get hot in the playoffs and really be the guy that turns the ship around.
Good call on all three things, Matthew. We appreciate it. 617-779-7937 is the telephone number. We'll talk to Mike Giardi at the bottom of the hour about the Patriots and the NFL and the look of you know, the football landscape in general. It's Dale and Keefe. Hart and Cattles are in the house. Sports Radio WEEI.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.